We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ian Happ now.
Ian Happ, outfielder for your Chicago Cubs.
Happ leaps and makes the catch along the indentation of the wall.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
I did not sleep last night.
If I go over there and ask you to turn it down, and you don't turn it down?
You're going to see angry Ian, too. That's not good.
I'll start breaking down doors.
Connect Roasters coffee enthusiast.
Get out the tape measure, long gone. One of the longest home runs Happ has ever hit to right field in this ballpark, bar none.
Ian Happ with Bernstein and Holmes on The Score.
Vote for this man. Find him the votes. He's running this stealth all-star campaign at the moment, and he's too humble to go out and do it for himself. That's just not his style. So we're going to have to help do it for him with the guys in the Compound Podcast. Ian Happ is on Twitter at IHAP_1. The Cubs outfielder joins us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Hello, Ian. How are you?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Man, we are great. And since Dan brought it up, on MLB.com today, there is a Will Leach piece about stealth all-star candidates. And guess who he has slated as the Cubs stealth all-star candidate?
I'm guessing me.
It is you. It is you, Ian Happ. You are the stealth candidate for the Cubs. I know that look, players kind of grouse at the idea of campaigning, but what would it mean to you if you were an all-star?
I mean, it would be incredible. I think, you know, some of that stuff, you just go out and you play every day and you just try to, you know, put together the best year you can. But, you know, one of those things that you dream of as a kid, being recognized by the fans, by your peers, as being deserving of playing in that game is something that is it's really, really special, and it would mean the world to me.
Do you have any like memories of All-Star games past? Like anything that you like remember from watching the games, or like the guys line up or anything like that?
Yeah, I think just as a kid watching the games, you know, watching the Home Run Derby and you know, some of those great derbies with, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. and Sosa, McGuire, and those guys. And then, it was an event. It still is. It was something that when you were a kid, you would tune in to watch, you know, those guys compete against each other and how special that was.
I don't think I've ever asked this. Who was your first favorite baseball player?
First favorite baseball? Yeah. Omar Vizquel. That was like, because I grew up as an Indians fan. And so like switch hitting shortstop, Omar Vizquel was kind of, he was the guy for me.
Yeah, it's a little problematic now, but I'm surprised. So it wasn't a Pirate, because you were in Pittsburgh, like sort of too late for the childhood imprinting?
Yeah, it was more Cleveland. It was like the guys that were on those teams. And then kind of as I got older, it was Chipper Jones and guys that were kind of across the league, really, really good players.
Another switch hitter, yeah. Well, a different, similar question. Whose swing were you emulating the most when you were younger?
That's a good question. Like, early on, I'm trying to think, like, early, you know, Albert Pujols was always one that you would like that would come up. But then it was Josh Hamilton for me, left-handed. That was, like, the big one. Kind of when I got to middle school, high school, it was like Josh Hamilton was in his prime. And that was one that I always enjoyed watching. And I think there's a little bit of similarity there in my left-handed finish, just probably from all those years of watching him hit.
Is there anyone in the game now where you look at their swing and you go, oh my God, that's gorgeous?
I mean, yeah, plenty of guys. I think, like, Wilson Contreras is always one right-handed that his swing is just like, oh, that's a powerful move. And then, like, some of the best players in the game, you know, you watch Trout hit. That move's unbelievable. I'm trying to think of, like, a lefty, just pretty, pretty swing that is, I mean, I loved watching Riz hit. Riz was one that his the guys you play with, you just watch him hit so much. Riz is the way he would pimp home runs, and his whole body would freeze up. He'd go rigor mortis. It was pretty good.
You survived the squirrel attack. We played all the different calls of that at PNC to just hear how. So what's running through your mind? You're like, oh, okay, I guess we're gonna do this now.
Yeah, it was one of those ones where you see it start to creep onto the field and just like, oh no, please, please stay off the field. Just go back. And then as it's running around, crowd gets into it. Then at some point, you know, they're going to have to come remove this thing or retrieve it. And then it was pretty funny as it got to the bullpen. And then you just see some of the grounds crew members laying under the bullpen bench trying to get this thing to get out of there.
Any other issue? We've seen, I know the Texas League has had all kinds of snakes on the field. They get armadillos. There's all sorts of regional things at the minor league level. Anything from high school, college, or minors?
No, I can't say that. I can't think that in the minors we either had a raccoon in the dugout or something like that in the minor leagues. That might have been in Tennessee. One of those type of things. But I've never had like a crazy animal incident.
Ian, how fun was Sunday?
It was great. I mean, to take a series, to go in to St. Louis, team that's playing really good baseball, and play three really competitive games like that. I think the last series we had with them was super competitive, and this one, same thing. And just to be able to mount a comeback there on Sunday and then hold it down and have one of those kind of felt like a really uniting team win where the little things happen throughout the game. Everybody contributes. I think Nico's play in the 10th there was unbelievable when Robertson goes out and throws really well and goes after, you know, the 3-4 hole there. That's a pretty impressive way to win a baseball game.
I know we've talked about Nico before, and I've been following some of the guys, the people I really respect analyzing the game. I know Matthew Trueblood and some of the people who work for Baseball Prospectus are starting to change the overall scouting reports on Nico just because of how quickly he's improved. If he can stay healthy, looking at him as one of these, you know, it's from my past, like a Rick Burleson type, like maybe not a star, but a solid starter quality everyday shortstop who helps you win in multiple ways and can do it for 10 years. Like there, and I know his draft status would reflect that, but from a guy who's really battled through and really had to deal with a lot of frankly reasonable doubts about what he can and can't do, he may be close to establishing himself there.
I think he's been really impressive on all fronts. I think he's still, from an offensive standpoint, like he has such a knowledge of what he does well, and there's some room for growth there that he knows, or he has an understanding of, like, okay, these are the things I have to get better at. You know, he's going, at some point, he's going to walk more. He's going to get on base more. You know, he's always going to hit for a high average. He's going to find some power in there because he knows what he's trying to do. And so, like, I believe that there's, as good as he's been offensively, like there's definitely another level that he's capable of reaching, and he's like well on his way to that. And a lot of people also he's only had 500 major league at bats or something like that. You know, he's going to learn so much in the next 500, the next 1,000 major league at bats. And I'm really excited for that. And defensively, he's been an absolute stud. I think the metrics back that up. You know, he's going to be a high WAR player because of his ability to play good defense and to have the athleticism and the range that he does.
These were the names. I'm going to quote Matthew Trueblood directly just because he's really good at this stuff and always has been. He said, I think the spectrum of outcomes is extremely wide. He said the floor is Ryan Terrio's short arc as a useful player. But if he's healthy, the spectrum is Rick Burleson, Jim Gantner, Orlando Cabrera, Steve Sachs. I find that an interesting cloud of names for somebody who at least saw all those players play.
That is quite the spectrum. I really do think that he's a player right now that is not getting a ton of recognition, and that you will see in the next couple of years to be always up there in war metrics, always up there in kind of, this guy is a very, very good Major League Baseball player, and he's super dependable. He's good in the clubhouse. He really wants to win every single day, and like those things that really make him a great teammate.
Ian, considering your journey, your Major League journey, when you look at a guy like Chris Morel, and you see, like, he got off to a really wonderful start. He's in a little bit of a valley right now. What can you offer a player like that if they ask? Like, what things do you think are valuable from what you've been through to get and to stay here?
Yeah, it's just you got to keep learning every single day. And I think the game changes on you so fast as a young player. It can speed up. It's every day. And the way teams are pitching you, the way teams are attacking you, it changes really quick, and you end up in a situation where, you know, teams see one little weakness and they exploit it, and they're going to do it every single day until you figure it out or make a change to that. And so, you know, he's just going through one of those which we all go through, and it's completely, you know, normal. But as a young player, it's understanding, you know, the quickest way to get out of that, what, you know, not to get deep into your own head and just figure out, all right, what's the league trying to do to me? Take a step back. What's the league trying to do to me? And how do I kind of make that adjustment back? Because those things happen at such a rapid pace early in your career.
You and Dakota Mekas and Zach Short had a fascinating conversation. We were talking about, I believe it was the injury to Machado. And it was a discussion about Major League Baseball players who play full seasons. Of guys who are going to play 160 games in a year or just are always out there. And I found it really interesting to hear how you talked about, for lack of a better term, budgeting energy and or effort. And not in a way that says a guy isn't trying, but how to know when to go 80%, when to go 85%. I want to make sure I do it justice to hit on how, from a professional aspect, you look at that. Like, what is the primer on, for if a guy wants to play a full season, how to do it without getting hurt and while still keeping up effort?
I think it's something that on the surface to fans doesn't always sound like the most popular or exciting thing to talk about, but every fan base, every teammate should want their best players to be on the field every single day. And so, you know, what does that take from a player? What is that budgeting? You know, if you go out there and you play 120% every single play every day, you're going to burn yourself out and you're not going to be able to make it through 162. Probably going to tweak something, hurt something, or when you do need that last leg of energy. We just played 17 straight, for example, the Cubs. And so when you get to that 16th out of 17 days, it's 100 degrees in St. Louis. You know, how much do you have in the reserves to be able to make that last, you know, play in the ninth when you do need the run or something like that? So I think it's all about, you know, understanding game situations, understanding that in the big leagues, for the most part, you're out by a step or half a step every single time you hit a ground ball. You know, guys are really, really good. They have great internal clocks. You know, if there's a run on the line, if this is a play that,
did we just lose Ian?
It sounded like he was like ejected from the plane or something.
Yeah, it sounded like someone was like starting a lawnmower almost.
Or it's like, remember in Men in Black when they flush the facility?
Oh, yeah.
Right? I think we got it back. You okay, Ian?
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's all right.
All right, so you were saying like the players are thrown out by a step or a half a step on every play.
Yeah. Yeah, guys are out by half a step on every play. They have really good internal clocks in the big leagues. And then, you know, you learn from veterans about how to conserve your energy when, you know, when it's Sunday night baseball and there's 2 minutes in between innings instead of a minute 30, getting out with, you know, 1 second, 1 minute left on the clock. Or hey, it's 100 degrees today, get out with 30 seconds left on the clock. And, you know, the little things, not to take BP on a day when it's 100 degrees. It's just all those little things add up, and the guys who play every single day have to do a great job of you know, budgeting that energy and making sure that they are out there for 160, because they're so much more valuable being out there for 160 games and conserving some energy at times versus getting hurt and, you know, missing 30 games of the season.
How do you go about balancing, I don't feel 100% today versus I need to talk to a trainer because I don't feel 100% today?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's, when you've played for long enough, you kind of have an understanding for your body of when things, hey, this feels like something that is going to be a tough thing to get through, but, you know, isn't going to impact my performance. And there's some things that are, hey, this is worrying me a little bit. I think I need 24 hours to figure out if it's more serious than it is. And I think those, you know, kind of those calls throughout the course of the season, we play every single day. So you're making those calls kind of based on, all right, where are we at in the schedule? If I take today, you know, does that give me another off day in 2 days? You know, if I take today, do I have a day game today and a night game tomorrow that gives me long enough to rest? Like, you just look at all those factors to try to make sure that you're giving yourself the best chance to be in there as often as possible.
We were having a discussion earlier about the lockout and not being able to be in touch with organizations. When it came to your off-season workout, do you think that had any effect at all, that you weren't able to be in touch with the Cubs about what you were doing?
No, I mean, I think there was definitely guys that it impacted more than others. You know, there was, I'm sure there were pitchers and guys that were going through stuff, and if things crept up, that there was more of an impact for me personally. You know, going through my process and my off season, like, there wasn't that much of an impact. But guys were on different ends of the spectrum as far as how much involvement they have from the team in the off season, from training staff, from weight staff. So I do think it was just a pretty broad spectrum of who felt kind of the most impact from those times.
What's the latest you have going on in your sprawling charitable empire via Connect Roasters and else?
Yeah, pretty. We have the first tee golf event coming up in a couple of weeks. Excited for that.
Where's
that? The Waveland Project. I think it's at North Shore. The Waveland Project that they did, or continuing to do at Cindy Maravitz, is going really well. They just laid sod, I believe, for the practice putting green, everything. It looks fantastic. And the Morale Blend from Connect Roasters benefits the first tee. And Connect is about to send out all of the Dinger Dollars for June at the end of the month. So we're super excited about that. And have a couple more days for the Cubbies to go out and hit some home runs and add to that total.
You know, the best thing, I was talking to the starter at Maravitz. One of the reasons why they can't wait for that practice green to be done is because without a practice green, people are always like right on time for their tee times or slightly late for their tee times. So they're always calling out a name and people will come running up, because if you're at like Robert Black or Jackson Park, the other Muni courses, you're around there because there's a practice green. But because there hasn't been anywhere to hang out, it makes the starter crazy. So all the guys who work for that company who actually handle the starter's responsibilities know that there's sort of an ancillary knock-on effect there.
Yeah, I'm sure they're very excited for things to get back on time.
Yeah, indeed. Ian, thank you so much for your time, as always.
Thanks, guys.
That's Ian Happ of the Chicago Cubs.
There's very
little stuff in there.
Educational.
Right?
Talking with him about some of this stuff.
Boog Shambi and Jed Hoyer talked about some big picture things involving the Cubs on the Marquee Network yesterday. You'll hear their conversation in a moment on Bernstein and Holmes on The Score.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Our club does not need a rebuilding.
Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't there, Hawkeroo, but we've had some controversy over that very word when it's come to the other team in town. What it is, what it isn't, what you can say, what you can't say, where they want you to say it and where they don't, and who's sensitive about it. I think they're coming around a little bit on all fronts.
Good.
Yeah, just be honest. You're never going to go wrong by being honest about it. And I think there is now a bit of a PR repair campaign, I'm sensing, that maybe the Cubs are realizing the best thing they can do. Hey, and why not? People are still showing up and having fun and spending a lot of money in and around that ballpark. Do them the solid of being honest with them.
I wonder if there's a timing aspect of this, too. Meaning, where you are, like you're about midway through the season now.
Pre-deadline.
Yeah, like you can't do some of this stuff in April and May. Like your level of honesty and transparency can't be as open as it is right now, because you at least want to hold on for a little while longer that there's going to be some good things that end up happening for your team. I always hate, Dan, I hate when teams are reluctant to talk about rebuilds in honest ways. It's part of the reason that I hold out hope for Rick Hahn, because he was so transparent in the White Sox burn down. And I love Theo, because he just was like, look, let me be real with you.
He said, I will write the columns for you right now that you're going to write. He said that.
Let me be real with how bad things are. Things are bad, but they're going to get better. And here's how we're hoping things are going to get better. Whenever it's not baseball specific. I mean, the Bears, like, you're clearly rebuilding at the Bears. And they don't want to say that, even though we can look at their roster and go, come on,
why does your roster blow?
Then why is your roster terrible?
Where are the players who are good?
Why did you spend no money in free agency? Like, come on, we know what it is. It's okay to be honest and say, yeah, that's what we're doing. So I think that now that the Cubs have kind of shown who they are, and the injuries played a part in it, shown who they are, now you can get on to, well, yeah, we're totally rebuilding.
And I think that's the tone that was set here as Boog Shambi and Jed Hoyer spoke on Marquee Network.
So as far as the future and going forward, one of the topics that you've dealt with and throughout the media, can I say the R word? Can I say it? The rebuild word?
You can say it.
Okay. what's the deal as far as what is this process, and why do you think people are fixated on the announcement that this is officially a rebuild, not a rebuild, or what it's called? And where are you on that, using that word?
Yeah, I think people have wanted me to, you know, use that label to define what we're doing. And But I said repeatedly, and if I haven't done a good job of it, then that's, you know, ultimately that's on me to be able to articulate it. But, you know, last season we were prepared to buy at the deadline. We wanted to do that. We were in first place at this point last season. We ended up losing, you know, we lost 11 games in a row. That pushes out of contention. At that point, it was really clear we needed to, you know, to really focus on the future. Once we made those moves, it became really imperative that, you know, sort of when we're caught between a decision where it's like it's for now or for the future, then we should focus on the future to try to build a core of young players, to try to, you know, to build something great again. You know, last time when we got here, and we didn't use that word last time, I would add, but, you know, last time when we were in 2011, we came in here, you know, the infrastructure of the Cubs had been sort of underinvested in. We didn't have the technology or the people or the processes to be a great organization. That's not the case now. You know, we've invested in all those things thanks to the Ricketts. We have great people here and great processes. You know, we're always trying to get better. But as far as, you know, building up an entire organization, that's not where we are. To us, it's now at this, you know, stage for us, it's about building up a young group of young players and then building around them. And there's certainly things we can do better than we did last time. I think our building process last time went really as well as possible. I think there's things we can do in the maintenance phase of that we can certainly do better. But I do see those as different processes. And, you know, to me, it's not about labeling it. It's about talking about, like, what are we trying to accomplish? And what we're trying to accomplish is building that really healthy organizational foundation of young players so that we can go forward and really be great.
He never said what we're trying to do is win a World Series.
Okay. He did not. I didn't hear the whole thing. Maybe later on.
I know, you know that's my thing, that I like to hear that stated, that what this is the business that we're in of having flags that fly forever. And when he talked about the maintenance phase, that's sort of what he's referring to, I think, is the fact that they put a core together that never found its next level. That Baez, Bryant, Schwarber, Russell,
Contreras, Rizzo.
Never.
Hendricks.
It arrived and it won a World Series and it did okay, but then they had to sell it all off. And it's not like anybody's showing that the sell off at the was a bad idea on those guys. Nobody's tearing it up. Rizzo's having a nice year, but
there are a lot of people inside of some tweets last night about Rizzo hitting what is his 20th home run or whatever it is, and people complaining. Like, people are, oh, well, those wouldn't have been home runs at Wrigley Field. And you're right. I give Anthony Rizzo some credit for understanding that he could revitalize his career by being in a place that plays to his strengths. Like, that's a good thing to look at it and go, maybe I don't need to go back to the Cubs. Maybe I should look at this and go, how can I be the most effective player possible? I can go to this ballpark with this crazy lineup, this protection that's all around me, and a short porch in right field where I just kind of have to sneeze on the baseball and it's going to go out. But there were a lot of Cubs fans that were bothered, and they were telling truths. Like, they were telling truths about the park effects of where his home runs are hit and why they're hit. It's a like the American League East for Anthony Rizzo is a perfect place between Boston and playing at home in the Bronx. He's going to hit a lot of home runs. And those are the types of conclusions that I appreciate, like, players looking at in free agency and saying, I'm going to get my numbers up and I'm going to go here to do it. And I'm going to be on a team that probably is going to at least be right there to win the World Series.
Yeah, that's part of the agency of free agency. It's why they call it that. Is some of these professional decisions that are made are based on your own comfort level professionally and personally. I have no problem with that, and I don't think anybody should look down on that. Are you saying the people on Twitter were
kind of poo-pooing it, like, well, those wouldn't have been home runs anywhere else.
So what?
Exactly. Like,
and here's the other thing. You know what takes care of that? Weighted runs created plus. And that absolutely takes that out of the conversation entirely, because WRC Plus adjusts for that. We actually have one of the easiest to appreciate and understand statistics that that renders all that moot. Like, if you can go in and go into StatCast and look at all the stuff that Sarah Langs writes and say, well, you know, here, the overlay this with this park. Anthony Rizzo has a 137 WRC plus.
Yeah.
You know what? And that's park adjusted.
That's damn good.
That's damn good. That's park adjusted. And remind me, because I've got a trivia question that I stumbled into this last night. We don't necessarily have to do it today, but I've got just a cool aspect of that stat that I was looking at, because my son brought up Mike Trout last night. We were talking about Mike Trout because he was on, they were having dinner, and Jason's like, yeah, best baseball player ever. And Beth is like, what do you mean best baseball player ever? It's like, Mom, he's the best baseball player ever when you consider his age and the era and how baseball players get better every year, and he's this much better. She's like, nah, I don't really know who he is. I don't know. Because she's like, I don't really see him. I don't know. What does he advertise?
So, he does Subway, right? Which is weird because you would have thought, I mean, Subway's got all the money because they have the most restaurants, but you would have thought being a Mike from New Jersey.
You do Jersey Mike's,
The Jersey Mike's would have been like, here's all the money. But I guess Subway's got all the money, so.
I know where Jimmy John spent their money.
On Tony Bolonovich? I love those ads. Makes me laugh every time.
They spent millions on that ad campaign. I hope it's paying off for them, because I love the idea of people getting theirs. And Brad Garrett, by all accounts, is a good dude.
He's hilarious.
And takes care of people and is just a nice guy. Still has the greatest Emmy speech ever.
Ray? I don't even see Ray. Can we put Brad Garrett on the list?
Oh, he'd be awesome. Yeah.
Because I want to talk to him, because I feel I would like to know what his, because I feel that it's a Chicago accent that he's doing.
Yeah, a little bit.
And I want to know where he drew that character from.
I want to know what made it okay. Like, a lot of the stereotyping and some of the appropriation is not okay, but Bolonovich is like, is that Serbian?
Right.
What is he?
Well, I don't,
is it okay?
Yeah.
And some of the way that, like, the suburban interiors that they do are sort of Sopranos-y, Goodfellas-y.
Very much Sopranos-y.
The lighting is kitschy. There's a lot of that going on. So it's like, it's Italian without saying he's Italian, even though he's actually Jewish. So
it's kind of Serbian or Croat.
Yeah, Bolonovich. But Bologna is an Italian word because it comes from the city of Bologna. It's Mortadella di Bologna. But you had the Vich.
Meantime.
That makes it Eastern European. That's we can go a lot of places there. This is all a roundabout way of talking about Anthony Rizzo and the season that he's having and whether or not the Cubs are rebuilding.
And we could just, like, talk to him because he's funny.
We've got High Noon coming up. I have some happy birthday wishes, and I have potentially what I think is a supervillain origin story.
Ooh, I love that. I've got a couple of local basketball stories that one I think is very telling, the other one that I'm kind of confused by. And a move that happened inside the American League Central that had me a tad perplexed until I did a little bit more digging. That's coming up next. High Noon, Bernstein and Holmes on the Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The score.
And 670thescore.com. In Odyssey Station.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there. Out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High Noon?
High Noon is right now, and there was a lot of pitching talk today. We broke down the White Sox performance yesterday and Lucas Giolito. What he's throwing, how fast he's throwing it, when he's throwing it, what the pitch mix is. Heard him talk about his changeups. We held up a baseball and talked about the grips and the way the ball moves through the air. And we also talked more broadly about how we can. It would be nice to just snap our fingers and have the White Sox go back to being okay and fun and normal and not heavy and awful. And the one thing that could make that happen. We spoke with Ian Happ, and we also heard from Boog Shambi and Jed Hoyer talking about the Cubs rebuild.
It's High Noon.
Loyola over the last 6 years, Porter Moser and then Drew Valentine, has built up a pretty good program. I try to tell people that if they want a good time this fall and winter, they should go up to go watch a game at Loyola. It is incredible atmosphere.
You said it's the best place to watch basketball in Chicago.
I stand by that. It's a lot of fun. They just picked up two really interesting recruits. Twin brothers, Miles and Wes Rubin from Simeon, two 6'9 wing players, are going to go play ball at Loyola. And I think it's awesome. I think they're either three or four star recruits, depending on what recruiting service you take a look at. But it shows the type of work that has been done and the inroads that have been traveled by Loyola basketball and them going to the Final Four and some of that stuff resonating.
Now and with going to a new conference.
Exactly. Them going to the Atlantic 10. It's even more desirable for some of these guys that are local prospects to go, man, I could still have the experience of being in Chicago. You're going to get a completely different experience being in Rogers Park than you would be like living in Chatham, for example. But you could still go and visit Chatham if you wanted, whenever you wanted, because it's a long L ride back over to Chatham. But take note, like if you're DePaul, who's been doing a good job of recruiting, if you're UIC, like this is a big deal. And I love that there's a payoff at the end of this, because that's what most of the people at Loyola would tell you. They'd said, look, at some point, if we continue to have success, people are going to look at us first. They're going to say, well, I can get my shine at Loyola. I can play on national TV when we make it to the NCAA tournament every year. So shout out to Drew Valentine and the Ramblers. Porter Moser, that staff, and now Drew Valentine have built something really cool in Rogers Park, and people are taking notice.
Whatever happened to Gary Cooper, the strong, silent type?
Mel Brooks is 96 today.
Yay!
Happy birthday to one of the great comic filmmakers, one of the great comic personalities that has ever graced the planet Earth. And it was his work was instrumental in my upbringing. My child, going back to the earliest days I can remember of listening to the 2,000-Year-Old Man albums with my dad, the vinyl that we would put on there, just laugh uproariously. And I didn't understand half the jokes, but we listened to it. And that led to me being interested in Steve Martin when Let's Get Small came out in 1979 and learning how just these... I was into comedy and why things were funny and the different voices and the fabulous movies. And I've been reading Mel Brooks's memoir. And pick it up here and there. It's perfect for like a little thing here and there, a little vignette. You don't have to sit and read it all the way through. It's an easy read. And this is one of my favorite pages in the whole book. Just a couple of paragraphs that about a story of the making of Blazing Saddles. And this is page 225 when he talks about having finally gotten the movie paid for, having finally made it, and he showed it to the head of Warner Brothers. And this is how things went. This was the screening. This is the movie, and it's ready to go, ready to be released. Nothing like this has ever been done. And the head of Warner Brothers, I'm going to take you, these are the words of Mel Brooks. The head of Warner Brothers, who hadn't seen any of the footage before, grabbed me on the way out of the screening. He pulled me into the manager's office at the Avco Embassy Theater. He said, and I grabbed John Kelly, who was one of the assistants at Warner Brothers and who was a friend of Mel Brooks. And I grabbed John Kelly to come with me for moral support. He handed me a yellow legal pad and a pencil as the head of Warner and said, take notes. Farting scene out. I said, farting scene out. He said, no punching a horse. Cannot punch a horse. I said, how stupid of me. How silly. Can't hit a horse. Mongo punching a horse is out. So it went on and on. He said, N-word. Cannot say that word. I said, N-word. Out. He continued, no scenes with the secretary. No boobs. He said, out. Meanwhile, the greatest thing in Blazing Saddles is Madeline Kahn singing the song, I'm Tired. He said, that song's too dirty. Take that song out. I said, all right, I'm Tired is out. I'm taking all these notes. He's running a film studio. He should realize that if I had listened to every single thing he wanted me to cut, we'd have the shortest movie in the history of film. I sat down after he left. I tore the page of notes off the yellow legal pad. I crumpled it up. I tossed it in the waste paper basket. And John Calley said, "Well filed." I never changed a thing. As far as movie executives are concerned, always agree with them, but never do a thing they say. When the good reviews, and more importantly for the front office, the money starts rolling in, you'll never hear a bad word from the head of the studio again. Happy birthday, Mel Brooks.
One could look at the career of Dan Bernstein and be like, I wonder why he chose that story to tell.
No.
All right, well, as your partner, I asked and answered, counselor.
Sorry.
There's another local basketball story that has me a little bit perplexed, but I am looking forward to seeing how it plays out. Dee Brown, former Fighting Illini legend, or I guess current Fighting Illini legend, former Fighting Illini player, is now the head coach over at Roosevelt, an AIA school. He had been working as an assistant at UIC. What I think is interesting is that Dee Brown, when he was working in the D League, there were a lot of people that were like,
prospect,
keep your eye on Dee Brown. That's an NBA head coach someday. And I wonder what's gone on with him career-wise over the last couple years. I'm curious.
Was he a head coach of the D League?
I don't think so. I think he was just an assistant.
Well, maybe
in the
that's
D League.
What, maybe somebody told him you got to come up running a team.
That's what I'm wondering. Like, I'm wondering if, like, okay, I've had the experience of being an assistant now at UIC. I'm ready to kind of do my own thing. And I'm sure the folks at Roosevelt aren't like that. He's going to be here for 50 years. I'm sure they're like, it's great for us to have him here. He brings some cachet to Roosevelt's program. I think the Lakers. I think that's right. That Roosevelt is the Lakers. But I'm so interested in what happens next. Like how all of this goes. Because a lot of smart people around basketball that I trust have been like, no. You don't understand. Dee Brown's going to be a thing. So my hope is that this is the next step towards those people I talk to being right, it being a good thing for Roosevelt, and it being a good thing for Dee Brown.
We've got David Ross coming up. I'm going to save the supervillain origin story in real life for tomorrow's High Noon. It will be the first High Noon for Layla Rahimi to join us on tomorrow's first Layla Wednesday on the Bernstein and Holmes show. Rossi is next with us on The Score.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.